No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. After a couple of weeks of hiatus, after a hiatus of a week, Revenge of the Birds Radio is back. I'm your host, Jess Root, and I've got on the line Seth Cox, and we are now all Cardinals for the early show of the week, our all Cardinals show, in which we talk about the two wins the Cardinals had over the last 2 weeks. The last time we were on the air, the Cardinals were prepping for the St. Louis Rams after squeaking out a win against the San Francisco 49ers. They're now 11-2. They've won seven straight. They won convincingly over the Rams, avenging their early season loss with a 27-3 win in St. Louis. And then they followed that up on their short week with a 23-20 down to the wire thrilling victory on Thursday Night Football over the Minnesota Vikings at home. So the Cardinals now stand at 11-2. With the win, they clinched a postseason berth, so they are guaranteed. They have punched their ticket to the playoffs, and they are yet just on the cusp of locking down the NFC West and a likely first-round bye with the number two seed. With the number one seed, you know, barely in view as the Carolina Panthers continue their run. But that's what we're going to talk about tonight, recording on a Tuesday night. Seth Cox and I are going to talk Arizona Cardinals football, talk about the two wins, talk about the schedule moving forward, talk about the possible postseason. We may even get a little bit of draft talk in, and I'm sure Seth is ready for that. Seth loves to talk draft all year long, so we'll do a little bit of that. So Seth, welcome again to the show. How are you doing tonight?
Good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing great. Feels like it's been forever, hasn't it, since we last talked, even though it's just been a couple of weeks?
Yeah, it feels like it's been a while, so.
We didn't have a show last week. That was a combination of just, you know, in my case, the non-football part of my life. This happens to be a very busy time of year with things at home, things at work. It just didn't work out really well, but we are winding down the season, the regular season, hopefully for a playoff run. So let's just basic impressions. How do you think the Cardinals looked in their two wins? One, their win over the Rams, and then their win over the Vikings.
I thought the Rams win was more impressive simply because, they again kind of showed their ability to dominate a game. David Johnson was able to really step in and play well against, you know, a banged-up defense. But he did a good job, and I think, you know, we saw the fact that this offense is really, really talented. And then defensively, they just... and that's partly the fact that St. Louis's offense... I tweeted this out during the game, but St. Louis's offense might be the worst offense in the NFL when you consider the fact that they do have talent on that offense. So to see them be as bad as they are, you know, not just against the Cardinals, but then the Cardinals do dominate them like they did. I thought it was a good overall showing from them. And then you look at the Minnesota game, and I think we all kind of have the same idea that it's a win. It's, you know, an ugly win on a short week, but man, that was not what anybody expected when you looked at Minnesota coming into this game with basically four of their five best defensive players hurt, and then their fifth best defensive player gets hurt. you know, during the game, and they just could never really finish and put the Vikings away, and it came back all the way to the end where it took a terrible play call and a great play from Dwight Freeney for the Cardinals to pull out a much-needed win, but a maybe closer than it should have been win.
And for me, I was almost late. Yes, the Minnesota game, it was kind of odd because, well, one, Carson Palmer kind of said it was a weird week with all the players they were out. Palmer said that they didn't even get to release. They didn't see what they practiced for because they changed things up. They took a cornerback, put him at safety, brought up a corner. They did all sorts of stuff. They lost both of their starting safeties, and so it was an odd game. But at the same time, as we looked at the schedule a couple 3 weeks ago, this was a stretch that we were really worried about. Not because the Rams are any good, but because they already lost to him. So I wasn't necessarily worried as much about them losing to the Rams as I was earlier in the season. What the Rams have been playing, we got to see the Cardinals really dominate from horn to horn. But what was good is that they went against a physical Rams team and then turned around on a short week and beat a physical Minnesota team, although not nearly as impressive. They came away with a basically healthy, and they survived. And now we've got this final stretch of, well, and Minnesota really started it because they closed the season really against four potential playoff teams. Minnesota looks like they're probably going to be in the postseason. Then we've got Philadelphia this weekend, who is very much in the NFC East mix. They're tied for first right now, so they very well could be in the playoffs. Then Green Bay is going to be in the playoffs. And then Seattle, they're going to be in the playoffs, it appears. And so it really opens up that final quarter of the season where they had three or four at home with a whole bunch of sort of postseason warm-ups. And they're coming with victories. They beat the Rams considerably. They beat them significantly. They eked out a win against a playoff team. And I expect to sort of see these type of games moving forward, much to the chagrin of many Cardinals fans. I think we're going to see cardiac Cardinals football because got quality opponents the rest of the way, and as you get ready for the postseason, you want to see the team really kind of amped up and ready to play a football. That's kind of what they're doing. Even though they really have their season wrapped up, they still have their schedule lines up perfectly to get them ready for the postseason and what postseason football is.
Yeah, and they have a very talented roster, and I think a lot of what's going on sometimes is that they're trying to figure out how to best dispose all of those weapons at once. But again, you and I have talked about before, Arians and his offenses have a tendency to be super productive in yards and not super productive in touchdowns. And they've kind of quelled that this year, but we started to see some type of red zone issues pop up. So I think that'll be one thing
You there?
You have to be able to win games that you're maybe not playing at 100%, and that happened against Minnesota. And like I said, maybe not the fashion we all expected, but a win's a win, and you know, kind of like Carolina against New Orleans a couple of weeks ago, sometimes you take it any way you can get it.
Absolutely. So let's before we move forward, let's kind of outline what we'll talk about during this show. In terms of segments, we're going to talk about the good and the bad. Basically, what was good, what was bad from the wins, what has been the most impressive of the season so far, talk about our confidence level looking forward to the next few games. And you know, kind of the talk has been of how hot the Seattle Seahawks are. And obviously the Carolina Panthers continue to roll. And they not only are they just getting, they are looking very good offensively and defensively. Is there a team to fear, or are the Cardinals that team? And then we might even talk a little bit about, you know, the potential of resting teams as good in Week 17. There's that game against the Seattle Seahawks that might not matter for either team. Do you rest players? Do you not? And then we'll talk a little bit about the draft stuff moving forward. So talk about the good. Tell, what was, in your eyes, Seth, looking at, well, even looking at both games together and even individually, what are some of the good things that we could come away from those two games?
I think when you look at St. Louis, and it carried over for the most part into Minnesota, you have to be excited about what David Johnson brings. It's a different type of running game now. We're seeing much more outside runs, counters, sweeps, and then some stretch zone plays to the outside. There's not as much inside zone, which is okay. And then, obviously, his deployment in the passing game. So that's exciting. I think the other thing that continues to be exciting is, and it's kind of been, I don't say new trend, but it's kind of reappeared the last couple games, is the Cardinals' run defense against, you know, maybe the two best running backs in the NFL. They really stepped up and found a way to kind of get back into who they are, as, you know, making teams throw the ball around the field and then being able to kind of construct a pass rush to get to those, to the quarterback. And so that was kind of, because I think talking about how good the passing game is every week is kind of, you know, I don't know, it's not, you know, I don't want to take it for granted, but I think we need to...
How much can you talk about the fact that they just move the ball extremely well? Carson Palmer's playing such a... And week after week, there's two or three throws you're like, holy crap, Carson Palmer, that's good.
Yeah, and I think you have to be excited about the balance that the team has found. I'm looking right now. I wanted to double check before I said this. Where did it go? Oh, there it is. They've thrown the ball 458 times, and they ran the ball 374. So that's right about that. What is that, 55, or that's right about that 60-40 split we talked about at the beginning of the season.
And that's, in today's NFL, that's really what a 50-50 game is anymore.
Yeah, and so, you know, you have to be excited about what they're doing and how balanced they are, and I think you're just excited to see this going forward and how much this this team can continue to build on dominant performances, but also find ways to win. And so you saw a dominant performance against St. Louis with the sprinkles of red zone issues, and then you saw at times dominant performance against the Vikings, and then when it push came to shove, they were able to stop, you know, get the stop they needed, find the pass rush that they've been missing, and win the game.
And for me, the biggest positives, one, is the emergence of David Johnson. He appears, at least so far, to be the back that we believed he could be, and that we saw flashes of. A guy who can be a true bell cow, and what we're seeing workload-wise is, look at what they're doing. He's getting almost all the snaps. That's what Bruce Arians sees this guy as next year. I think they see him as a feature back, a guy who can run inside, outside. They kind of changed up the running games. He saw very little of the stretch plays, of the zone plays, a lot more power game inside and out. But he was also super effective. And what we saw early on where we wondered, well, he wasn't terribly effective in between the tackles. He was much better. As I wrote about today, earlier in the week, based on what the Pro Football Focus had graded, he was given the highest grade against Minnesota that any Cardinals running back now. Now, granted, some might think it was crazy that the league's fourth highest rusher in Chris Johnson could be the lowest rated back. And Pro Football Focus, in fairness, they were giving so much credit to the Cardinals' run blocking than it was to Chris Johnson's play. Whether you agree with that or not is a different story. But they gave David Johnson the credit because he eluded tackles, he kept going after contact. And on almost half of his runs, they went for at least 5 yards, which is, that's good. That's moving the pile. It's not just the 1 yard, 2 yards, negative one, then 50. He was consistently getting a good push into the second level. And it's exciting to see that, because as you kind of see how he's being used, guess what? He is essentially a bigger, better version of Andre Ellington. Kind of what they want to do with Andre Ellington, you can do with David Johnson and not necessarily worry about him breaking down. The other thing, if you look at, not necessarily Carson Palmer, who continues to impress, Michael Floyd has really kind of come around with, I think it's now 400-yard receiving games in the last 5 games, starting to show level consistency, and with his production, and despite the missed time that he's had this year, he has an outside chance of 1,000 yards, giving the Cardinals a potential, because Fitz is already there, John Brown's just on the cusp. Michael Floyd with some continued consistency, which will make the offseason interesting, because Michael Floyd is an interesting, intriguing talent to have in that passing game when he's healthy, because of what he is able to do. They have his fifth-year option exercised. Do they extend him? Do they play out the year? Do they cut ties? And that's going to be an interesting thing to do, because he is a very interesting toy to have in that offense, because he's got both the size and the speed that Arians likes. He really likes little guys, but when you've got Michael Floyd, who can run that up sub 4.5 and get up there and 6'4", 220, and to be able to make those plays down the field and he's starting to look again kind of like he did in the middle of 2013, where you're starting like, wait, ooh, this guy's going to be good. He's turning into a pretty decent season, and I continue to be impressed with, after what we saw early in the season, the Cardinals have learned what they needed to learn. They had a chance to win against St. Louis early in the season, and they failed. They played poorly and tried to rally against Pittsburgh, failed. They started out poorly against Cleveland, but then turned it around, and that was sort of the turning point. Now you're seeing key fourth quarter drives. You saw it against Seattle. You saw it against Cincinnati. You saw it against San Francisco. In St. Louis, they really didn't have that issue. And then you see it once again with Minnesota. There isn't any doubt with this offense. If they are in a situation in the fourth quarter, it's different. When they're ahead, they seem to sputter out. So whether it's an area of focus, but once they need points, they're getting points. And they're getting points when it counts.
Yeah, they seem to be able to really find a way to make big plays in certain situations as well. So that's what's needed. I talked about it with, I can't remember who it was on Twitter. It might have been Darren Page. It might have been Arif Hassan. I can't remember, but we were talking about, at the end of the game, really just was about the fact that the Cardinals and Carson Palmer drove down the field and got a field goal, while Teddy Bridgewater drove down the field and made a mistake that led to the the Vikings not being able to kick field goal. And you know, it's kind of simplistic in everything, and it doesn't take into account what happened with Petty and the play call and all of that stuff. But, I mean, now you just look at it, and it's just one of those things. It's one of those weird things that the Patriots, Green Bay fans, you know, have been, and maybe to an extent the Saints fans have grown accustomed to, but it's one of those weird things where every time the Cardinals get the ball, you're actually more surprised when they don't score points than when they actually, you know, are able to go down and make a big play or something like that.
Yeah, three and out. Yeah. Like, if they three and out, you're like, wait, what? No.
Yeah.
That's exactly how you feel. It's you know, even if they stall out, you see them, oh, well, there they go again, you know, getting to the 30, getting the field goal range, and then or getting just outside of field goal range and petering out. I mean, we've seen a lot of that, but it's been fun. This has been a strange year for Cardinals fans because if you're like me, there's still this little feeling in the pit of your stomach where you think, when is the other shoe going to drop? Even though the first shoe hasn't even dropped, but you just think it's coming.
Maybe, and I think part of it is that there's not a team that outside of Carolina has gone as, I don't want to really talk about it, but has been as fortunate injury-wise, maybe, as the Cardinals this year. Like, they haven't, you look around the league and you see all the people that other teams have lost. You know, we were just talking about it before the show. The poor Bengals and their fans.
Oh, jeez, yes.
And Dalton, you know, and you look at New England, they've lost two running backs, you know, and a wide receiver, and they lost Gronk for a game. And then you
although,
go to,
I will counter that in a little bit, because the Cardinals have been bit. They lost two running backs. They lost their starting nose tackle before the season even started. They were without Michael Floyd. They were without they've been without Mike Iupati at different parts of the season. Gerard Powers, starting corner. But, well, and then Frosty Rucker now, that I think might be the biggest. But you look at it, it's the fact that the Cardinals have built some quality depth at all their positions at where other teams. But when you look at the same situation, you don't feel like they're as key players. They're not the most important players, but they've set themselves up differently because they have, I mean, they've had several starters games lost. I mean, they lost an entire season of Corey Peters. They lost games early with playing time early with Michael Floyd. They missed a game with John Brown. They have Chris Johnson out. They've missed time with Andre Ellington. They've got Justin Bethel, who's been playing now. He's entering his third start now, who has three starts under his belt, it appears. So they have been, but that's also because of the work that their team has done.
Yeah, and that's definitely part of it. But I think a lot of it is, too, that when you look at the overall makeup of the team, you kind of hit on it. There's really only one player, right, that they can't lose.
Couple.
And that's similar to Green Bay and New England. I mean, it's similar to all teams, really.
Yeah, really, no team can really compete. You know, with the exception, had Indy been more talented in other places, with Matt Hasselbeck, they were in pretty good hands. But anyone else in the league, if you've got a decent starting quarterback, once you go to your backup, that's a big drop-off. But I'd say that Patrick Peterson is the other guy. You lose Patrick, you're going to lose a huge dimension of that defense.
And I think the only reason with Patrick is because, and this is going to get probably taken the wrong way, but I don't really care, is the fact that they don't have a pass rush, right? So you can't not have a pass rush and
lose your shutdown corner.
And not have a shutdown corner. Somebody asked me the other day, you know, if you could have Von Miller over Patrick Peterson, would you you know, going back to that draft, would you do it? And I said, well, you can't just do a straight swap, right? Because that's not fair. The Broncos have, you know, Aqib Talib. They have Bradley Roby. They have Chris Harris Jr. The Cardinals don't even have, like, four corners on the roster.
They have three corners and a guy that and a dynamic safety corner that no one knows exactly what his position is.
Yeah, but I mean that's just the difference. So, you know, would I like to have a Von Miller? Absolutely. But I don't think you can just be like, oh yeah, we'll swap that, because they just don't have the depth at corner. So you might be right. Patrick might be the other one. So that's what's interesting. But, you know, the team itself is just in a, they're in a zone. You can tell where it's, you know, you look at Carolina, and they're enjoying their ride, if you will. And I think the Cardinals are enjoying this and having fun, but I think the Seattle game was really, you know, the opening to, you know, the window, I should say, to this idea. But this is...
almost like a destiny team. Not to say that they're treating it like this is what we can do.
Well, and I think that when you are led by Carson Palmer, who is 35, is he going to be 35 this year?
I think
he's...
Or is
he going to be 36 this year?
He's going to be 36, anyway, I'm pretty sure.
So when you have a guy that's at the end of his career, as opposed to a guy in Cam Newton who's at the beginning of his career, you know, I think you get that, and you have other guys in the locker room that are in the same spot. You have Larry Fitzgerald, who's, you know, 32. You have, even though he's injured, you have Chris Johnson, who's kind of on his last leg. You have Mikey Potty.
And you've got a mature Calais Campbell. You've got a Frosty Rucker. You've got a really good one. A Patrick Peterson who wants to win now, because
and you have a coach that's in the same spot. I mean, he's 63 now, and you know he's not going to be around forever. And so what is, you know, how they understand that this is as good as they are and as talented as they are up and down, they also understand that this is a business where things flip on a dime. If you're not New England, things flip on, you know, at the drop of a hat. So they understand that while this is fun and they're enjoying their time, they also understand that this is a year, they lost last year, and this is a year that they don't want to have that same bitter what if taste in their mouth when it's all said and done.
So look at the bad thing. If we could look at some bad over the last couple of weeks, not a whole lot of bad to look at in St. Louis, other than the fact that they didn't score every time they were in the red zone. A game that was a convincing 27-3 win should have been probably 41-3, in all fairness. But we continue to see the pass rush issue, and I'm gonna give a caveat to this. So I'm gonna give a level of okay, this is what it is. They did. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater really sort of shredded them apart. But it was more about what I saw was, again, James Betcher was outdone by one of the most respected offensive minds in the league, in North Turner. Happened against Todd Haley, but I don't even know how much of it was coaching, because there are a bunch of fans have been complaining that the amount of blitzing. This is the same defense it's been all year. This is what it was with Todd Bowles. That's what they're going to do. But
it's just not getting home as much.
But to expect them to suddenly change their identity seems silly. When, if you look at it, we can look at Minnesota as this. We had defensive players who were paying a little too much attention to Adrian Peterson. And they did a really great job after that first drive. which would look like, oh man, this is going to be a mess of a night. They shut him down the rest of the way. And because they had to give extra attention to him, that opened things up for Bridgewater. Because it's not like he was, for the most part, he wasn't dicing them up and down the field deep. It was tight end outs and running backs in the flat who were open because they weren't completely executing their assignments.
No, and that's something that they've struggled with, you know, going back to week one. I mean, I was trying to remember if it was week one or week three. But yeah, going back to week one where they couldn't stop Mark Ingram and I think it was Tyree Robinson out of the backfield for the New Orleans Saints. And, you know, and everybody goes, oh, well, you know, Drew Brees, most of those yards came from short yardage stuff. Those still count, right?
Like, they do. They do.
And people said that to me the other day, like, oh, you know, most of Teddy's yards came after the catch. Well, they still count. Like, they still get them into a position to make a play. And that's what that's what you don't want to see, so to speak. You don't want to see a team move up and down the field on them and you know, be able to take shots. And so
although if we look back, we talked about this after week one, it was the death by a thousand cuts. And you can... The Cardinals seem to be willing to do that in some ways because they're going to try and get home on the blitz, getting pressure on the quarterback. They're going to try and shut down the running game, and they're going to try and take plays away down the field. And so that leaves sort of the middle of the field open sometimes, and they're going to exploit it from time to time, especially if they're not really sound on their assignments. But as you get closer and closer to scoring position, get to the red zone, guess what? That middle of the field closes up, and they're going to limit you to three rather than seven, and there are going to be times where they don't convert. And so as we look at that, as we look at games like that, you sort of live with that because it's better than, you know, the home run or the home run pass, like you see Arians, like the Arians offense or the Cardinals offense do to teams.
Yeah, and overall, you know, that I think that's the one thing defensively you can complain about. And then offensively, you know, we talked about it earlier. I think the only, like, legitimate complaint is that they sometimes struggle in the red zone. And that's, you know, and it's not even all the time. And I think, you know, I think when you criticize a team that's doing really well, people take it as that you're criticizing the entirety of the team and you're saying they suck. And no, I mean, no team's perfect, and the teams that have been perfect usually end up losing. So you look at, you know, even New England back in 2007 when they ran the table in the regular season and they were just beating the crap out of everybody
and had a fluke couple of, and they still lost the Super Bowl on a couple of fluky plays because that's how football works.
Yeah, and a lot of it was, you know, and then they weren't able to execute down the stretch because they struggled in pass protection. But, you know, there was only one team that had the ability to, you know, kind of take advantage of that. So, you know, it's the same thing. You look at it, who has a running back that can hurt the Cardinals in the passing game? I don't know if there is one in the NFC, you know, and that they might face. So, you know, maybe it's not a big deal, but you go over to the AFC, and, well, New England doesn't anymore because all of their running backs have broken every bone in the box. But, you know, that's kind of what happens is you just have to watch things, and you have to, you know, you have to see what could possibly go wrong as you're enjoying everything else. You know, you don't just look at it and blindly think, oh, well, this is the greatest team ever assembled. Don't mind those two losses, though, because those never happen. You can still be critical of certain aspects of what's going on and agree that this team is one of the better teams in the NFL.
Now, another thing that we can probably harp on is that of the short yardage plays, that seems to be the bugaboo. And we've run across it a couple of times over the last couple of weeks. In the fourth quarter, when they, because they've given up now, a trend that you don't want to have is that, you know, it seems in the four of the last five games, they've given up leads of at least 10 points and lost them. Either they fell behind or the game was tied. And I'm willing to, at some level, sort of mark that up to the level of competition. They didn't have nearly the level of competition. They went from playing virtually nobody in the first half of the season to this entire second half of the season has been, with the exception of San Francisco and Seattle and New St. Louis, has been playoff team after playoff team after playoff team. And when you play playoff teams, especially skilled offensive playoff teams, and I would say Seattle, definitely skilled offensively. Minnesota, definitely rather Cincinnati, very skilled offensively. And Minnesota, maybe a little less so, but they have one of the best running backs in the history of the game, and they have a promising young quarterback. And so when you're playing against playoff teams, they don't just roll over like you saw the Niners do earlier in the season or I saw the Lions do. They don't roll over. They rally. So we've seen that, but the issue is when they have fourth quarter drives where they go three and out and that they can't convert on third and one, and we've seen that in a couple of times over the last few weeks. We got third and one, you've got to convert, especially as good an offense as they're supposed to have, or they can't have assignments, and it usually is a case, it's not the other team necessarily just beating them physically, it's where they mess up an assignment, and that's just, that drives Bruce Arians crazy. Like when you're down at the goal line and then you let a free rusher go and you end up getting sacked, instead of getting seven, you end up with three. And it's just little stupid things like that, or the inability to just run the ball 1 yard.
Well, and it's interesting because we saw it in a few who didn't, unfortunately, you missed out, but we saw it on the Bruce Arians, you know, Football Life video, and something that we've talked about before. Maybe not on the air, but I know that we've talked about it before, is that, you know, he has a tendency on third one to, or third and short, to go ahead and take shots, right? And so that's an improvement. That's just who he is as a coach. And I think that, you know, you hit on it that some plays, I think there was one against Minnesota. It's been so long, though, I honestly don't remember if it was Minnesota or St. Louis, where one of the offensive linemen just like completely whiffed on the block, and I think it was Minnesota on the goal line, and I think it was
Phil Deere,
yeah, that's right. Didn't even block anybody, and Taylor got hit. Right? Was that on the run play? So I don't know. Like
the sack that I'm thinking about was when they had it was a big formation. They had three tights in the game. And actually, you know, in the press box with Adam Green, we finally saw what we wanted, kind of fun to see, is A.Q. Shipley out in the flat out for a pass route. Well covered, but Palmer just didn't have any time to get the ball away. And Bruce said on Friday that it wasn't Troy Nicholas who messed up on that play, but rather Jared Valdir, because Troy was out going up for a pass.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just one of those situations, like you said, but that's who he is as a coach on those short yardage plays in the middle of the field, he's going to take a chance. And there's a lot of times where it's going to work really well, and then there's a lot of times that it's going to be like, why didn't you just run the ball? But let's be honest, they don't really run the ball well all the time on third and one either. So, you know, I get, you know, irritated with it as well. I know you get irritated with it as well sometimes. And at least it's fun to watch. It may be infuriating during the game when they're up 10, and instead of just continuing to milk the clock, they go for it, you know, a kill shot. But, you know, we kind of saw the opposite this week, right? Like, they're going down the field to milk the clock out, and I don't remember what put them in the second and long situation, and they, you know, decided to run the ball, and we're all like, oh, Bruce Arians on second and 18 runs the ball? Like, he doesn't try to pick it up? Like, what is this world coming to? So, you know, it's just, it'll be fun. it'll be interesting always with Arians calling plays, but you know, at least it's been an adventure, and at least it, and at least so far it's been the Cardinals coming out on the right end of it.
We've already sort of talked about the kind of the most impressive part of this season, and it's the fact that they keep overcoming things. But let's look ahead to the upcoming schedule. The Cardinals are in a great position. They have already clinched a spot in the playoffs. One win gets them the division crown. One loss by Seattle gets them the division crown. And heck, even as I posted on Tuesday, thanks to some research by someone else, because I don't do that research on my own, in terms of strength of victory, the Cardinals don't even have to technically win. They actually hold a 3-game lead over Seattle in the 5th tiebreak scenario. Because if the Cardinals lost out and the Seahawks win out, they both sit at 11-5, and they'd be tied in the rec. They'd be tied at the record. They'd be tied it again head to head. They'd be tied in the division. They'd be, and then you go to the strength of victory. And the Cardinals currently have a 3-game lead, where there is a scenario where this weekend, a combination of a couple wins by some teams, a couple losses by other teams, the Cardinals don't even have to win, and the Cardinals don't, and the Seahawks don't even have to lose. They can still clinch that division title. So it is almost a foregone conclusion, barring the biggest collapse in history, like we've seen before, that the Cardinals are going to be the number 2 seed, and they're going to be the division crown. They're going to be the NFC West champs. And so we look ahead. You've got Philadelphia on the road. That's not going to be the easiest game. Then you've got Green Bay at home, and you've got Seattle at home. Nonetheless, I'm so glad the Cardinals have this schedule, because they don't have a chance. While they might have a chance to rest, but they can't really let up, because you're having playoff scenarios, playoff teams every week.
Yeah, and I think you have a really intriguing and interesting final 3 games, where, you know, everybody likes to make fun of Philadelphia, but they're kind of putting it together right now. And so maybe it's not time to, like, fire Chip Kelly yet, you know, maybe after the season. But right now, you know, they're still in a position to make the playoffs. And so that's a team, again, like Minnesota, that you, as the Cardinals, you need to be able to beat. And then the next week, obviously, you're playing the team that you're trying to keep out of the 2 seed. And then hopefully you're in week, you know, 17, you have a chance to keep Seattle out of the playoffs or something, you know, or keep them away from you, maybe get them into the 6th seed or something of that nature, where you have less of a chance to see them early. So, like you said, it's fun because they really aren't in a position where they can take their foot off the gas, because they're still playing for a bye. I mean, they don't have a bye locked up. And you look at who Green Bay's playing, and they have Oakland this week. And Oakland's not bad, but, I mean, you expect Green Bay to win that game, so you need Arizona to win their game. And then you look at the next week, obviously, the head-to-head matchup, and, you know, if Arizona wins that game, then it's over. And they don't, you know, maybe they don't have a ton to play for against Seattle, but it would be even more fun if they had the opportunity to keep Seattle out of the playoffs. I doubt it, because I think Seattle has...
They'll probably have it locked up by then.
Well, they have Cleveland this week, and unless Johnny Manziel, you know, manifests it to greater. So, and then... you know... It'll be interesting to watch. Maybe week 17, you kind of shake your head and go, oh, man, too bad, you know, they can't do anything against these Seahawks. Let's, you know,
maybe they let Carson and company play a half and then take him out and let him, you know, get a week and a half off as they have the two seed locked up. But on the other hand, maybe Bruce Arians, knowing Bruce Arians, he'd probably go, you know, balls to the wall there and keep his foot on the gas and try to
and especially win. Knowing because they do have the bye the next week, so you don't have to worry about that, you know, the post Seattle game, which seems to have been a problem historically. You tend to lose the next game. No, they're not going to lose with the bye.
Exactly, and they have a week. And plus it's just a statement, you know. Arians has still only won two and three. This is his third year. Yeah, so he's 2-3 now. So, yeah, he'd probably like to get back to .500 against Seattle in the division, and he'd probably like to go 5-1 in the division. So those are two interesting, you know, scenarios to think about as well. So, like you said, I think the way this ended, you know, a lot of people are cursing the fact that Seattle kind of had the backwards portion of the Cardinals' easy beginning of the season schedule, whereas it's, you know, it's going to keep the Cardinals on their toes and playing at a high level for the next 3 weeks as they head into the playoffs, because they're in the playoffs, so now the question is, where do they land, you know, in week one or hopefully week two of the playoffs?
And I look at it this way, as we kind of move on to the next topic, and that's, you know, the Cardinals, despite how good and really on both sides of the ball they've been great all year long, there are two teams that everyone's talking about now. One is the Seahawks, because they are on a roll. Two is the Panthers, because after this squeaking by, but they are starting to roll offensively. And there's kind of this notion where you should sort of fear a team. We should fear the Seahawks going into the postseason, or you should fear the Panthers going into the postseason. And while there is a part of me, the fan part of me, that still feels a part, and I'm pitting my something. Oh, what happened? Because we've seen it happen. We saw it happen last year. The worst can happen. But it's at the point now where, despite how hot Seattle is right now, you have to look at the bigger picture. There's no reason to fear anyone when you're a fan of the Cardinals right now. This year, there isn't anyone to fear because the Cardinals can beat every single one of them. And as good as Seattle's been playing, look at how they've done against their top opponents. They have the reason why the Cardinals are ahead in that strength of victory. Look at who they played. The Cardinals have beaten their top competition. They beat Seattle. They beat Minnesota. They beat Cincinnati. They've beaten those top teams, while Seattle lost to Carolina, lost to Cincinnati. Yes, they beat up on Minnesota, but the top competition that the Seattle has seen this year, they have not beaten. And they've not, and even when they beat Pittsburgh, and they came close to that defense, that vaunted defense, has really been very, very suspect against good offenses. And so Cardinals fans, we shouldn't fear any team. The Cardinals are the team that teams need to fear because they're so balanced on both sides of the ball. And honestly, nobody has stopped them offensively except for themselves.
Yeah, and you look at the only that, you know, dare me, and scare is not, you know, the word in which I mean it, but scare is the only two teams that you want to avoid as much as possible in the postseason, to me, are Seattle and Denver, surprisingly enough, on the other side. And obviously Denver is the Super Bowl, so you're happy that they're there, but probably not happy in the sense that you know, you're okay if you lose. But anyway, and that's because of their pass rush ability. Nothing else but the fact that they have the ability to rush the passer as well, if not better than anybody in the league. And so with the Cardinals, you know, sometimes suspect offensive line, those are the only two teams that I prefer to avoid for as long as possible, you know, in this scenario. And it's not that there's any fear to them. It's just that matchup-wise, I think that those teams match up better than even a team like New England, who I think the Cardinals, you know, would be able to...
They can keep up with them. And they, I think they can stop enough, especially with the amount of injuries that they've had on their offense out of the ball, is that the Cardinals are well-equipped to handle their offense and can put enough points to put them in a bad position.
And I feel the same way about Carolina. And then, obviously, there's always the fact that Green Bay and New England, especially, the wild card is they just have the best quarterbacks.
True.
So, and even, you know, Carolina this year has kind of been the same way, where the quarterbacks are making plays that nobody else, you know, in the NFL can. So,
and
maybe,
Russell Wilson again, has reached that level in the last few weeks, and so you've got some really elite-level play from quarterbacks. You've got it from Cam, you've got it from Russ, you've got it from Palmer, you've got it from Aaron Rodgers, you've got it from Tom Brady. You're getting it from the best teams at the right time.
Yeah, and you know, you don't want to leave Carson out of the mix, because I think he's playing at a very high level as well. So, but you know, as we've seen previously with Kurt Warner, if you have a quarterback who can get into a zone, you're a dangerous team. And so, you know, maybe you don't worry about the Seattles and the Washingtons or the, you know, the New York, well, the Giants, I think you always worry about, because Eli has proven that he can, you know, carry it.
Eli's just dumb. he's dumb enough to forget all the crap that he does. I mean, he's a really talented quarterback, but he does.
Yeah.
But then he's just dumb enough to where he forgets that he's not Peyton, and does. He's like
amazing.
He does amazing things in the clutch when Peyton frequently falters.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I think, you know, the only two teams I think have a good matchup, quote unquote, with the Cardinals are Seattle and Denver. And I think we saw that in Seattle. Seattle game was a great game. From both sides, I thought, just overall, I thought it was a great game, and I'm glad the Cardinals came out on top, because I'm sure I'd feel differently, but I thought it was just a great game, and I think Denver would be similar, because their defense would present enough problems for the Cardinals' offense to slow them down enough, and so those are the only two teams, so I don't think
they can, mainly, they can cover Cardinals receivers. That Carolina can do that a little bit, but Denver can actually get to Carson and cover down the field. That's where the other teams
exactly.
are different.
Yeah, so, you know, again, if you're in the Super Bowl, you can't avoid great teams, you know. So
except
that's
if you're Colts and you play the Bears.
Yeah. So, but I think, you know, everybody else, like you said, there's no team in the NFL that the Cardinals fear, which is nice. You know, it's a different even than the Warner years, where you're like, man, I really hope that you don't run into, you know, Team X, and then obviously it's different than the last couple of years when you're like, I really like to not have to play Seattle and San Francisco four times.
Well, and there's the one thing about facing Seattle. The reason why I don't want to is it's really hard to beat a team three times in a season. It's hard enough to beat a team once. But there's that level of familiarity. Yes, they already beat them. So for me, the invincibility of the Seahawks is gone. Because the Cardinals went into Seattle. And aside from a couple of plays on the defensive side and breakdowns and the pass rush, they really took it to Seattle. They beat the crap out of them and just said to their defense, no, you can't stop us. However, it faced them enough times, it could go the other way. I just don't, you know, if we could avoid Seattle, that'd be great. Although, beating them three times in a season would be really sweet.
Yes, and it would be fun to eliminate them, right, Yeah, I'm with you. Like, preferably not. And it's not that I think you know, that they'll lose. It's just that, that man, the one team I wouldn't want to lose.
Exactly.
I think I can get over every other team. I couldn't get over Seattle.
That would be the worst, because we would never hear the end of it from those damn 12s. God.
Yeah, well, especially once the Cardinals lock up the NFC West, if they were to lose in the playoffs after winning the NFC West crown, you know, sans a Palmer injury, yeah, that would be if. That's the only way I could put it, if.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I'm not going to worry about that. So let's actually do a little bit of just a smidge of draft talk. It says we're starting to get to the point of the season where the mock drafts, because we're at the end of the college football season, so we can really honestly start looking ahead to some players. A few mock drafts out. Early mock drafts I've seen, the Cardinals late in the first round taking defensive tackles. Seth saw another one. It came from Steve... I don't know how to pronounce his last name, from Pro Football Focus. An interesting thing where he has the Cardinals going guard in the first round. Curious, because they, you know, committed a lot of capital to Jonathan Cooper and then spent a lot of money on Mike Iupati. And now Jonathan Cooper is on the bench. Ted Larson's a free agent. You can't imagine that they re-sign him. But drafting another guard in the first round, how viable do you think that is?
Oh, man. Well, the thing is, you know, with the draft, well, I think Pro Football Focus is the best resource in terms of need, because they use their grades to define what the need of a team is and then draft based on that. So they're saying that guard is a need. So I'm okay with that pick in the scope of everything. I disagree with it. I don't think you can invest in another guard that, you know, what is it, 4 years after Cooper. I just don't think you can do it. But, you know, whatever. I mean, if they do it, I'm not gonna complain too much. It's better than not, you know, investing in any offensive lineman for 7 years. So
Yep. If you looked at kind of the talent of the first round, Cardinals will be drafting late. If you had to use your crystal ball, where do you think the Cardinals' focus will be coming up this offseason? Pass rusher, you always say, but getting a pass rusher that's in any sort of worth anything franchise-wise that late in the first round is going to be tough.
I think there's one pass rusher that is special, and I hate that word, but he's very and his name's Noah Smith. It's a name to remember if you're Cardinals fan. Just tuck it in your back pocket for the process.
What's the name of the
he goes to, I think he's at Western Kentucky. Look, he was at Ohio State. Eastern Kentucky, my bad. Eastern Kentucky. He was at Ohio State. So he is an amazing talent, but he also is a knucklehead. So that's why he could be the one kind of really impact player that falls there, that is a pass rusher that is available late. You know, so Noah Spence, good name to know. He reminds me... And don't overthink this too much. He reminds me of Khalil Mack, so I think he has a lot of talent. So maybe that's the one kind of pass rusher that they could hone in on. That's a true, you know, outside linebacker, 3-4 type. After that, I think it's a crapshoot. I think Corey Peters' injury, Frosty Rucker being old, what is he now, 33, 34, Corey Redding kind of showing his age this year, and then I'm interested to see what they have with Gunter, if they're going to keep him in the middle, or if they're going to move him to more of his natural three technique and let him play that other defensive end opposite Calais. And let's not forget, Calais is kind of showing impatience here. So maybe, you know, and he's coming off his best game of the season, too, so it's probably not the best time to say this. But you know, it would be a horrible thing to, you know, to look to maybe be ready to transition, not replace, but transition away from him. So there's that. Offensively, it's going to be interesting because I think David Johnson is going to put to bed the notion that they need to draft a running back. I can't remember who said it a couple weeks ago, and I said when they said, you know, if David Johnson doesn't play well, they need to draft another running back. And I'm kind of like, oh no, that's the opposite of what they need to do. Because you can't have just a bunch of rookies or second-year guys and Andre Ellington as your running back stable. So I think running back is probably not an option. In this class, one more option to think about is possibly quarterback. Sorry, I couldn't think about it. I couldn't think of the name. And that's Connor Cook. You know, a lot of people don't like him because he's kind of a dick, and I'm okay with that. So it doesn't bother me. So, and I think he'd be a nice...
And now the question is he Philip Rivers' dick, or is he Jay Cutler? Is he the kind of prick on the team that's going to not be a leader, Cutler, or will he be agitated but emotional on the field but still get results done like Philip Rivers?
Yeah, and I think so far he's been, you know, closer to Rivers in that sense, since you look at him and, you know, he's got a chance for a national title after, you know, a Big Ten title loss and then a Big Ten title win, you know, in his first 3 years. So he's a talented player, interesting. I don't mind him, so I know some people don't like him, but I like him, so I'm okay with that. But, you know, when I look at the talent on the Cardinals, the one, like, glaring weakness on offense to me and to you is center. But I kind of think Bruce Arians is happy with their center position. So I don't know if that's going to...
Well, the question is, are they going to bring Lyle back after this year?
Yeah, that's true, too. I always forget that he's on a one-year... He was a one-year deal,
He's
right?
a one-year deal? They obviously weren't happy enough with, well, at least with behind Shipley. They sound like they would have been okay with Shipley starting, but they really did not like Ted Larson at center.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, you could see a center in round one. I don't know if there is any worth it. So I think it's going to come down to, I think corner is going to be an interesting one because this is a talented corner group. I think inside linebacker is very talented in this draft. So maybe if they think they can move down back to strong safety and, you know, not re-sign either of Rashad or Tony and use that money elsewhere, that's another possibility where they can
transition from Minter. And just leave Dayon inside. That's another possibility.
That is. And then, you know, when you talk about, and we'll just call it the front five for the Cardinals because of the way they play it. But when you talk about the two outside linebackers and, you know, the three defensive linemen, I don't think you can ever count that out until they have, you know, just unmistakable talent there. But you even look at the Denver Broncos. I mean, they had unmistakable talent, and they took Shane Ray anyway. So I don't think you could ever have enough talent at outside linebacker or defensive line. So that's always a position. And so this draft is similar to last year, where you've got really like 7 to 10 blue chippers, and then everybody else is, you know, from like probably... I'll say 15 because I haven't done enough work yet, but I'll say right now 15 to like 40 is probably, there's no real big gap. It's just a matter of what you need or what you're looking for.
All right, so we did a little bit of draft talk. That's where I feel a little less confident talking, as Seth does. So I let him do most of that talking. But we've reached another end of Revenge of the Birds Radio. This is our all-Cardinals show. The Cardinals have their game this weekend on Sunday Night Football, flexed again to Sunday Night Football with the Philadelphia Eagles out in Philadelphia. Whether or not we'll have a show next week, I will personally be out of town, so logistics might make it that it won't be good. I'm staying up with the in-laws. The internet connection isn't nearly as reliable, but maybe we'll have a show. Maybe not. So maybe it won't be until after, hopefully, they have taken care of both the Eagles and the Packers and have the number 2 seed locked up. In the meantime, I believe I might have a preview show this week with Bleeding Green Nation. I believe I'll have Brandon Gauton on. I'm not sure. I haven't nailed down a time exactly yet, but you might have a preview show. If not, Merry Christmas to everybody. If we don't get to have another show next week, thanks for listening. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root, and this is Revenge of the Barrett, Revenge of the Birds Radio. Thank you for listening.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.